to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for May 23rd. I'm John Gibson, and back from New York, and joining me as usual is Jim Allen. Hello, Jim.
Hello, John. How's everything going?
Oh, hanging in there. And yourself?
Right. Well, I survived. And,
all right. Well, welcome back. Welcome back.
We survived New York. We had a great time and met some people that we were looking forward to seeing, and met a few people that completely out of the blue, people we haven't seen in a long time.
All right, well, we'll get to that, but first I want to give a big thanks to Michael Westbay for sitting in for you the past 2 weeks. Thank you very much, MW.
Yes, Michael.
We hope to have him back on the show again in the future and probably maybe do some segments even when we're on at the same time. So,
yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, keep your headset ready, Michael. So, Jim, tell us about your trip. Man, New York, I certainly wanted to go there and see the Dodgers and the Mets, but
well,
you got there first.
Yeah, indeed I did. It's a Hayao Monogatari. Okay. Okay, well, briefly, we went to Citi Field because the Dodgers were in town. Trey Hillman, the former Fighters manager, is the bench coach for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Coolest job in the world.
And Terry Collins, the former Oryx Buffaloes manager for a year and a month.
I'm not sure that's the coolest job in the world.
is managing the New York Mets, which is he's really eating it up. He's enjoying it. He's out there throwing batting practice. Looks like a little kid. Trey Hillman was doing the same. It was great to talk to those two guys. There were a couple of Japanese ball players. The oddity is I wanted to talk to Hiroki Kuroda, and we never seemed to be in the same place at the same time.
Why is that? Jim Allen and Hiroki Kuroda, same guy?
No. No. I was waiting for Kuroda one time, and I was off looking for Terry Collins one day, and the next day I was off looking for Ryoti Igarashi. So it just didn't happen.
But you did get to talk to Trey Hillman. You did get to talk to Terry Collins. And who else did you talk to?
I did get to talk to Ryota Igarashi, former Rocket Boy of the Yakult Swallows.
Rocket Boy!
And oddly enough, their interpreters, one of whom, Igarashi's interpreter, is a guy named Mike Peters, who I met years ago when he was an exchange student here at Waseda.
Mm-hmm.
And met the Dodgers traveling secretary, a gentleman named Scott Akasaki, who's from Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
But I met him when he was an exchange student here in Japan about 15 years ago.
My goodness.
And helped both those guys out, and they came up to me, and it was like, whoa!
And last from the past.
There was a lot of that. Okay, so basically, yeah, I caught up with Terry. He told me about how he came to be Mets manager. He took some time off after leaving Oryx. Then he took a job managing China in the WBC.
Mm-hmm.
After that, Omar Minaya called him and asked him to do player development with the Mets. And then when they decided to go with new management, Omar asked him if he wanted to do it. Terry answered him with a yes and less than a nanosecond, which is perhaps a world record.
Perhaps.
Well,
only because we don't know how quickly other people turned it down. I'm kidding.
Well, no. You just have to, knowing Terry Collins, you just had to wonder, you know, if he was slightly caffeinated, it might have been at maximum speed, but it's hard to tell when Terry Collins is and isn't caffeinated because he's always at full speed.
Right. Well, that's a team in transition, you know, it seems every season now these days, but that's a tough job. So, you know, taking that gig is really taking your life in your hands there. But if anybody can, well, in terms of, you know, the heart attacks, you know, the heart problems that you could develop in trying to manage the team on a daily basis. And I mean, you look at the injuries that that team has gone through so far in this season and the past seasons, Carlos Beltran and people like that. David Wright is out right now, right? So it can't be good on the heart. It just cannot be.
Well, and Trey was telling me how much he enjoyed living in Manhattan Beach.
Oh.
There's this guy from Arlington, Texas, talking about how he's loving being near the ocean.
Oh, man. I used to go down there a lot when I was in college, and my girlfriend in college at the time was from South Bay. We called it South Bay. And, man, I used to go down to Manhattan Beach once in a while. And, in fact, I went there earlier this year just driving through. So, yeah, that's a nice place to live.
Okay, well, he's there, and he was working with Don Mattingly, and he's enjoying that. Thanks the world to Don Mattingly. And he was very pleased to be working with Kuroda, and he was talking about Kuroda's had difficulties with a little bit of difficulty with his curveball, mm-hmm. with Major League Ball, because it's a little slicker.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been sticking with it and sticking with it and sticking with it, and Trey's said he was impressed by his work, his guts and his work ethic. Yeah. Trey also we spoke a little bit about everybody in the majors favorite player in Japan.
Hmm. Favorite Japanese player.
Well, a Japanese Iranian player.
Yu Darvish, huh? He's their favorite. And why did they say he was their favorite?
Well, I'm telling you, he's their favorite. He's the one everybody can't wait to see in a major league uniform.
Oh, that's the one who's causing so much drool to be dripped on shoe tops these days, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, and I was asking Trey, and he says he thinks Darvish is going to be a top-of-the-rotation guy.
I can't see. If he's the same guy who Hillman managed while he was up there, yes. If he's the guy we've seen the past two seasons who has been, you know, the velocity has been down a little bit and he's been a little bit more inconsistent, I'm not sure. But, and I say inconsistent for him. You know, not anyone else, it's probably acceptable. But the dominant Darvish we saw when he won the Sawamura Award, we haven't seen that guy since then.
I beg to differ.
The numbers might say, but I mean, if you look at his ball, if you see him live and you see his ball and you see the way the bats react to it, he's a different pitcher.
Yeah.
Slightly.
I think that's going to happen anyway.
The numbers are there though.
He's going through, you know, he's going through the process that every good pitcher who gets regular playing time goes through in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they peak within a couple of years of getting a regular workload, and then they go into a long phase of decline. Now in Japan, a long phase of decline used to last 3 years, and the guy was done. now it's stretching out. It might be 7 years, 8 years, 10 years, 12 years, because they're treating arms a lot better than they used to.
Right. So you're going to put these interviews in a column, one column, or one story,
well,
feature story? What are you going to do?
No, I have a column coming up this week, and I think it's going to be a Where Have They Been column.
Okay.
Where Are They Now column with Trey and Terry and Med John Divas, and I won't relate some of the comments John Divas made because this is ostensibly a family program.
Family show.
Family values, baby.
Keep the internet clean.
I'm not going to relate. John Divas has plenty of values, but I'm not certain. I'm not certain how to categorize them all.
Whether or not to call them values. All right. Well. All right. Well, we'll look forward to seeing that this week.
I also met Bobby Valentine.
That's right. Bobby V.
Mr. ESPN, and here's what Bobby had to say. Do you miss being on the field? He says, I'm on the field twice a week. That's plenty. What he does the other 5 days a week is actually function as Stamford, Connecticut's Commissioner of Public Health and Safety.
Stamford,
this is a full-time job.
Commissioner of Public Health and Safety.
Yes. While I was there, he was battling to hammer out an agreement between Stanford's firefighters and the volunteer fighters on their rules of engagement and labor contracts and all this, and was not having great luck at it. But he plays a very important role in the community, and when I was there on May 11th, he was honored. About 450 people showed up for a dinner in his honor when he was awarded. He was received his award as as Stanford's Citizen of the Year for 2010.
So, which one is his part-time job then? Is it ESPN?
I think ESPN's number two on the list. It pays. He works. He gives the money he gets from the city of Stanford to charity.
So that must not be enough to impress him. So he must be getting more from ESPN.
Sure he is.
You would think, but that's his part-time gig, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I see him, you know, I like to watch ESPN, and I've seen Baseball Tonight a number of times, and a lot of the national broadcasts that they do on ESPN, when they do a baseball game once or twice a week, I'm not sure which one it is, but I've heard his commentary, and he's doing a great job there, so...
And the last part is, I was thinking about Bobby the other day, and I bumped into Yasushi Tao, the former Eagles man, the first Rakuten Eagles manager.
That's right.
They're now on number four.
And you bumped into him where?
At Cebu Dome.
Okay.
And where he was there for an event. And I asked him how he was enjoying... being an analyst, and he said he was eating it up. He said next to managing, it was the most fun thing he's done.
Mm-hmm. And he's good in the booth. He's really good.
I can't say, but he said that it gives him a chance to think inside the game and try to stay ahead of the game without knowing what each manager has, you know, what all the cards each manager is holding.
Right, what the chess pieces do. You're not really as familiar with what the chess pieces do, but... that in itself is intriguing and makes the game go a lot quicker, actually, too.
Well, anything that does that is a bonus. I'll tell him you said. But he was enjoying that, so that's that.
Okay. All right. Well, here we go. Let's get to clearing the bases. All right, we're going to start with Interleague, and I wrote a story the other day. Went out to Cebu Dome and talked to Termell Sledge, who played in the Pacific League and now in the Central League with the Yokohama Bay Stars. And essentially, he said he was licking his chops as a member of the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters.
Yep.
At the prospect of getting to face Central League pitchers. Because he said the Pacific League pitchers they threw harder, they threw a lot more fastballs, and they were just tougher. And, you know, we know that the Pacific League has essentially owned, they've won all of the so-called interleague titles.
Correct.
The first 6 years so far. So, but this year I think it's different. The gist of my story was that the CAL has a great chance this year to win the interleague championship, and
a few times. So there have been teams that have done well and only lost it. The Swallows came very close once. The Giants came very close once. So it has been something that has not been out of reach.
That's true. And one year, I don't remember what year it was. I can look it up as we talk. But one year, the Pacific League team won. But the next three teams were Central League teams. And that probably was 2008 when the Central League finished with more overall victories.
That was when the Hawks won, I believe.
So it's possible. It's likely. And Termell Sledge said he thinks the Swallows are going to win, and I actually am going to go with that, even though they lost again tonight. But I'm going to
win the Interleague title.
I think they're going to win. That's what he said, and that's what I think.
Well, good luck with that. I hope so.
What team do you predict will win?
Oh, I don't really care. I mean, what difference? I mean, the Interleague title doesn't really mean much.
It doesn't mean anything, but it's fun. It's fun for the fans. It's fun for the reporters, I think, because we get to see different matchups.
I'd like to see the Marines win it, because if only because of a long sort of background story at with the front office at Chiba Lotte Marines. They were going to, a couple of years ago, 2009, when they were busy sabotaging Bobby Valentine, they froze all the salaries of all the support staff, saying they needed the money to build an indoor practice facility closer to the stadium.
Right.
And that was going to open on opening day 2009.
Yeah, that's what we need.
Here, when the Marines were in the hunt for the Interleague title, Saburo Omura comes out, if we win the Interleague title, we should use that money to pay for that practice facility.
Yes.
I guarantee you, if the Marines win the title, there will be no closer to getting their practice facility.
Nope.
That money ain't going anywhere that anybody's ever going to see it.
Yeah, pockets. Or maybe they'll get another bus to run fans from Taihi Makuhari Station.
Well, they don't pay for those. That's all cheap.
Perhaps they'll buy a special one. Yeah, I looked it up here. It is 2008 when the Hawks won the Interleague title, but the next three teams, the Tigers. Oh, that's not true. What is this? Nippon Ham Fighters were third, but then the Giants were fourth. The Tigers were second, and then the Giants were fourth.
So it does happen. Now, as to why it happens, I think we have... There's one important reason, and that is the DH.
Yeah, that is it doesn't really work to the advantage of the CL teams I've seen.
No, it doesn't. Now it does actually. The odd thing is that this year, since last year, the Central League DHs actually did pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
They had Kanemoto was doing well, and Alex Ramirez was doing well. Tony Blanco was not. But they had a bunch of guys who were essentially not out of positions, but whose best position is in the batter's box.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is atypical of a Central League team. Usually when the Central League team plays without plays with the DH, they end up using these guys who have their spare wheels. They're not really big hitters.
Right.
And whereas they go up against Pacific League teams that have a guy who can really slug the ball, but often doesn't have a position.
And
Jim Leyland, the manager of the Tigers, was saying how much of a disadvantage it was because his pitchers don't get to hit during the rest of the season. And that they were going to lose these games because they were without their DH. And the Central League pitchers are better hitters. Well, Jim Leyland, go get a new headset or whatever it is, a new mindset, because, look, the difference between your Pacific League pitchers who can't hit and the Central League pitchers who can't hit is zero.
Wow.
Almost none of these guys are going to hit. None of these guys are going to help you. Excuse me, American League and National League, same thing in the Central. And the Pacific pitchers, more or less, don't hit, but... The difference is between having a designated hitter in the Pacific League Park who can hit and one who can't.
Right. And I remember you and I discussed the fact that a lot of the times the Central Leagues don't have a guy who specifically can just come up, bat, and then go back to the dugout when the team goes out into the field.
Right.
And they didn't feel like they were in the game rhythm or the rhythm of the game because they were sitting on the bench instead of taking their usual spot.
Right. Alex Ramirez, of course, recently he set a record for most consecutive games by a Giants player in the number four spot.
That's right. Passed Hideki Matsui's record. Yes.
And he said, "I want to be in the game. I want to be on the field every day." He said to the Japanese reporters at Yokohama Stadium earlier this month, and I said, "Unless you can be a DH," and he said, "That's right, unless I can be DH."
Okay, I looked it up. It was 2009, and the Hawks won the Interleague, and then the second place team was the Yakult Swallows, and then Hiroshima, and then Chunichi. This was in 2009, and then actually the Giants were fourth.
Okay.
So they have had a year where they've really come close, but
the Pacific League, I think the leagues with the DHs will always have a little bit of an advantage. And I'll tell you, when interleague play started, Trey Hillman didn't really think much of the Pacific League team's chances because he thought at that time Central League power arm things that the Pacific League really had very few of.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought it was going to be a tough matchup, and it's never really proved that way.
Yeah, because I don't think the last year's winner, the Oryx Buffaloes, who ended up finishing fifth,
right,
in the Pacific League last year, but they dominated basically interleague, and they didn't do it with really power arms. They just won games.
Well, funny how that works.
You don't really have to throw all that hard. You have to out hit the other team. You have to win. You have to play defense, and you have to run the bases well. You have to generate runs. They did that better than anybody in interleague last year. So,
your guys, the Dragons, have gotten better at interleague after the first year when they dismissed it.
That's right. As far as I recall, this is they won their first three games this year. That's the first time they've ever done that. They usually either lose the first two or lose at least the first one. And
right.
They had a great comeback the other day. I don't know how you walk Tony Blanco at all.
Oh,
but then with two outs,
Tony's our guy. Don't say that.
Hey, Tony's a great guy. He's a great guy. I just don't think, you know, for him to take a walk, you really have to throw a ball out of the zone somewhere. I mean, maybe roll it up there, or possibly throw it at him, and then maybe he's got to get out of the way. Wow, yeah, great comeback for them, and they won that game. Then they got the snot beat out of them the next day for their first loss. But they're doing okay. They won today. What are they? They're 4-1 in interleague play at the moment. So, good for them. I'd like to see them. Of course, I'd like to see them win. I just think the Swallows, I think, are going to match up a little bit better. And they have better distribution of team speed. Dragons do not.
Well, I want to, before we get off the Dragons, talk about your boy, Mr. Chen Wei-Yin.
Oh.
Now, I saw him. He pitched on Friday,
mm-hmm.
and I was talking to a buddy of mine, a reporter for the Chinichi Shimbun, and he told me that Chen's first two starts this year were pretty disappointing. His velocity was way off. Well, I'll tell you, he was looking really good on Friday. His velocity is still not back.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, he wasn't sitting. Normally, his fastball sits about 151, 152.
Right.
It was sitting about 147, 148, but that's a big step up. He was sub 145 in his first start. A little better the week after that.
Right. Now, I didn't get to see any of his game. How was the movement on his pitches?
Well, it looked pretty good. He was keeping people off. The problem was caused by the one pitch that stayed up on the barrel of Jose Fernandez's bat.
And I saw the pitch, and it's not the kind of pitch that you say, "Oh, I want that back." It was a fastball in the outside part of the plate, up at the letters.
It was borderline. It could easily have been a ball.
I think it was a ball. I wouldn't have called it.
In a way, it's not a pitch you expect to see hit out of the park.
No.
It was an inning that saw a hit that was, in fact, an error, a ball that Moreno should have got, but he picked it up and threw it over his shoulder when he tried to field it.
Well, Chen, he has a tendency to either give up runs early or in a tight battle, he'll give up runs from the sixth inning on. If the score is tied, he has a tendency to do that a lot in the games that I've seen him pitch. But so he gave up the home run early and then he settled down, right?
Yeah. He was very good. He was he wasn't that bad when he was bad, and he was much better after that. So that's a load. Of course, then the other thing is that Yamai came back on Saturday and he's got some more work to do.
Yeah. You think? He had his problems, but I saw the pitching sequence to Nakajima. Nakajima Hiroyuki hits a grand slam off of Yamai. And you know, he threw him an off-speed pitch in the sequence. He was trying to throw away with hard stuff, and I thought they were going to throw something off-speed, maybe away or come inside or something to do something different. He threw a waste pitch. He threw a waste pitch, and then he tried to sneak a fastball past him. And I mean, that kid, you're not going to get a fastball by him, not in the zone. You know,
not by my. And not, yeah. not when his other pitches aren't working.
Right, and it was a 3-2 pitch, and he just put a smackdown on it, and hey, that happens. You know, it was after that that the game really got out of hand. If they could have gotten that under control, it would have been a manageable situation. Maybe they could have had one of those rallies in the ninth inning again. But
yeah, one of those 6-run ninth inning rallies we see so many of.
So many of. What was that rally now? With the how many walks and wild pitches and dogs running around out there.
Yeah, who let the dogs out, baby? Because there was a lot of that going on.
There at least three walks, four hits.
On my score sheet,
again. Hits and up and all that stuff.
It was ugly. And then Alex Gremond came on, who got the win tonight. Said that he's been battling back. He had a real serious shoulder surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been out for a long, long time. He says he's feeling good. He's feeling his velocity was slightly down, but his mechanics are pretty much where they were before the injury, which is saying a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems to be on it. He gave up one hit. It was a ground ball that could have been caught.
The psyche base hit that.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it just, you know, it wasn't hit all that hard. He threw a slider, I think. It was breaking down in a way, and Psyche went with it and hit a slicer, and it sliced away. Yeah,
yep.
Left-handed pitcher, left-handed batter, funny spin on the ball, slicing away from the shortstop. And, you know, when I saw it hit, I was thinking, well, you know, he hit it at the perfect speed to allow Kazuhiro Wada to get home from second. Because if he hits it any harder, Wada's going to get thrown out at the plate. He's not a fast runner, even though there were two outs.
Even though he stole his first base. Actually, I expected that to be a rare event. He stole his first base yesterday, but he's been stealing his 4 or 5 bases a year.
Mostly at gunpoint, right?
No. He just waits till they're not really holding him very well at first. Then he takes off and, you know, he gets on there and, you know, does his little bit, so takes people by surprise.
Well, speaking of surprises, the Giants have been injured. Yeah. They've lost a lot of guys.
Who are these guys? Is what I want to know.
Put a bunch of guys out there who apparently most of these guys are first picks in the drafts, like 2006, 2007, 2008. Now they're being thrust into the arena, and they're not killing the ball. In fact, Taishi Ota's first base hit of his pro career was a little floater that settled in nicely in between, you know, the center fielder and the shortstop. But
you make it sound like it should have a gender test or something.
Well, I don't. Semenya, right? Is the runner in? I don't think he hit the ball, but I don't think he meant to hurt it. I mean, you know, he just wanted to place it down lightly in a spot where it wouldn't damage any of the grass or anything out there in Sendai.
You're being mean. You're being mean. He wanted to wail on it and he missed it.
Well, so yeah, they get these guys out of here. But one of the moves that they made recently was to put Hayato Sakamoto in the number 3 spot. And I think, I got to be honest, I think he should be groomed to be their number 3 hitter for years to come, because he was basically, I think, being wasted at the top of the lineup in a sense, okay, because he doesn't have a great on-base percentage. But he had a 560, going into today's game, he had a 560 average with runners in scoring position. And okay, he's the kind of guy who's going to get you the occasional home run. He'll hit with power sometimes. He hits a lot of line drives. He's going to, you know, if you put him in a number 3 spot in their guys' place, he's going to get him over.
Okay, well, let's raise your hands. Anybody who thinks, anybody who has 400 at-bats in a season is going to have a 500 on batting average with runners in scoring position. Do I see anybody with their hands up?
Where are you looking?
Except the dumb kid in the corner.
Well, obviously that's inflated at the moment, and he's, you know, he's going good right now, and that's, we expect that to come down to what, maybe something reasonable like 300 or something, but
well,
you know, I still think he's that kind of a hitter who,
he's a 282 hitter, career hitter, so 300 would not be, would be about the norm.
Right, right. But, yeah, he's gonna be a good number three hitter, I think, for years to come, and I think that's a good spot for him. I just don't know, when Michihiro Ogasawara comes back from injury. He's got, what, a deep bruise in the calf muscle. When he comes back, they'll probably shift, Sakamoto back somewhere, you know, number one again, maybe number five. I don't know. But I think he'd be wasted at the top of the lineup, and he doesn't
like
speed.
You like Chono better than you like Sakamoto. I mean, I know that Sakamoto is, you know, he's basically a slasher.
You mean as a leadoff hitter?
Yeah.
You know, they don't, if it's not Matsumoto or Suzuki, guys who get on base and try to steal their way over to the next base, then why not put a hitter out there?
Okay, well, I'm okay with Sakamoto. I don't really see the difference at this stage between Sakamoto and Chono.
Mm-hmm.
They're fairly similar in terms of what they're going to do to the ball when they're batting.
Right.
I think Chono's going to hit for a little. Well, of course, on the other hand, Sakamoto is still younger than he is. He's got more room to grow. Chono's got that second year boost. You know, he's got the fact that he's still adjusting to the level of play, although he pretty much mastered that last year.
Mm-hmm.
Sakamoto has a chance to have a fairly large remaining growth spurt that Chono doesn't have. I don't see, you know, based on what we've seen of them, I don't see a lot different. I mean, Chono's, I doubt he's going to have a lot of home runs this year.
Well, he'll get his share playing in that stadium. They have so many more chances to hit home runs there. But I think eventually Chono's going to be the kind of guy who's going to get on base a little bit more. He seems to be a little bit more patient at the plate.
Right.
He'll take more walks. He's very selective. Where Sakamoto doesn't take as many walks. He's not really interested in on base percentage. And
Sakamoto dabbles. You know, he'll dabble in. He said early on he wanted to hit 30 home runs. Okay, well, he's done that. What happens is he gets into these situations where he sets himself goals. And then the other things kind of fall by the wayside. Not to mean that he succeeds in it. And last year his goal was to make fewer errors. And look where that got him.
Did he make more or did he make fewer than that? I can't remember.
I
think he made more.
I think he did make more.
I'll say
in a second, but.
Well, you know, that's the errors. I mean, in the game that you were at, the Dragons, I think that was the Saturday game, and a ball hit right at Saiki. And, I mean, it was hit maybe a couple inches to his right, and he doesn't come up with it, and they call it a hit. And then today I'm at Tokyo Dome and there's a ball hit to Sakamoto's left, and it was hit not that hard, but the expectation was that the shortstop would make the play, in my mind. Sakamoto goes to his left, he doesn't glove the ball cleanly, he ends up having the ball spill out of his glove and has to run it down, and in the meantime a runner who was on second base comes all the way around to score, and they called it a hit. And not only did they say it was a hit, it wasn't an error because he dropped the ball and had to chase it down. That the runner scored on the throw is what they.
Didn't we have a runner score from second base on a bunt?
We had that as well.
And a guy got an RBI because the guy scored from second base on a bunt because somebody threw the ball. The pitcher threw the ball to third base and nobody was covering.
Well, these scorers, you know, I don't know where they went to school, but they have driven me crazy.
Cal State Fullerton?
You stop it. Just stop it. No, it's somewhere in the Bay Area.
Sorry.
That's all right, man. You enjoy your World Series and your first place. You guys are in first place, right? The Giants are at the moment.
Are they?
I believe they are.
That's too scary.
I believe they are. Yeah, with that team. So you enjoy it. Yeah, Cal State Fullerton.
Okay, thanks. So for the record, Mr. Sakamoto.
Yes.
He made 19 errors in 2009.
Nine.
And then he vowed to make fewer in 2010 and made two more.
Yeah.
He did, however, turn eight more double plays, which is a little better. And other numbers were comparable. So it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a big up or down. But, yeah, so one has to watch out. He gets obsessed with numbers sometimes, and that's really not something you hope to see. You expect to see with a guy who has a good on-base percentage, because as soon as you start looking at your batting average and thinking, I gotta hit a pitch, as opposed to, I gotta get on base.
Right.
Then, they're not with the program. And I think Sakamoto sometimes is not with the program.
Yeah. Well, he has been on the program, I mean, the hitting program, he's been doing a good job this year for them, making up for maybe not so much with his batting average, but he's been clutch for them, obviously, with a .560 average with runs in scoring position. So,
That being said, I think he's probably the best, has the brightest future of any player in Japan, if only because of what he's done so far at a very young age.
Right.
The number of players who who are full-time regulars at the age of 19. Let's see, we had Hideki Matsui, we had Higashide of the Carp, we had a couple of other guys who were, you know, the worst players of in that group are going to be very good players.
In general,
and,
yeah.
And the best guys are Hall of Famers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really elite group, and so I expect him to be perhaps the best player in Japan over the next 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, he's going to torment your team and my team for years to come. So,
take him out and beat him up a little bit.
Well, or we just do what he does, which is, I mean, he must be paying. Yeah, you know, he wanted to make fewer errors. I think he's paying the scores so that he won't get fewer errors credited to him or something.
Absolutely.
That play today was just, I mean, it's at some point you got to give him an error, whether it's because he didn't come up with the ball cleanly or because he booted it into center field and had to chase it down. But hey, you know,
right.
In the score box.
Stop picking on. We love you. We love you, son.
Sakamoto, yeah. All right, let's talk about what, there was one injury that's, well, there are always injuries this week, in each week, but the one that caught my eye was Hisashi Iwakuma, the ace for the Rakuten Eagles, was deactivated and discomfort in the shoulder.
Right.
This comes the third start after he had a 147 pitch complete game. So you wonder if that's not related. I hope he gets back soon.
It's unlikely that it's related. You know, what we know about pitchers' arms is what we don't know, which is a lot.
Right.
It's become a buzzword, you know, keep the pitch counts down, but I think we're manageable. I think they're essentially manageable right now. I don't see, there has been shown to be a slight ill effect from pitching throwing a lot of pitches.
Mm-hmm.
But how big it is, I've always feared for Iwakuma's arm, considering his build and how many pitches he used to throw when he was with the Kintetsu Buffaloes when he was very young. But and he has been up and down. I mean, you can say Darvish has gone down, but you know Iwakuma's been on a. Of course, you know he won a Sawamura Award when he didn't deserve it, and when Darvish did.
Right.
And Darvish was, you know, anyway, we'll forget about Darvish, but I'm saying that Iwakuma's arm and pitcher's arms in general, we really don't know enough to say that was the cause.
Certainly, and I just look at the fact that he threw a lot of pitches in the game. I watched the game that he threw 147 pitches, and he still looked strong in the ninth inning. He it was a close game, and Seiichi Hoshino, the manager, didn't even really go out to the mound and hesitate to leave him out there, partly because the bullpen is certainly an X factor. You never know what you're going to get each night. But
right.
The other part was that he was throwing well that night. He wasn't laboring through 147 pitches. They weren't 147.
Was he missing bats a lot?
Arduous pitches. He missed some bats, but I mean, they fouled off a lot of pitches, obviously. To get to 147, it wasn't because he gave up a lot of hits. It's because, he gave up, they fouled pitches off. But, he still looked really strong in the late innings, and, he pitched well in the next two starts after that, but, he did have a bad start. And they deactivated him, and hopefully he'll be back soon. And hopefully,
well, pitchers. I mean, it's a very demanding job, and pitchers do get hurt regularly, just with small unrelated things to the pitching, the pitch counts. If they're routinely going over those on short rest, yeah, I don't think it's. I wouldn't think it's related at this stage. Now it could be related to something else that we're not seeing.
Right.
But anyway, and the other question you might ask is how often was he throwing his slider?
Yeah.
The Eagles pitching coach, Sato Yoshinori, the other Sato, the original Yoshinori Sato.
Uh-huh.
Not the imposter.
Not the one with the swallow.
Not the little imposter pitches for the swallows. Apparently he was pretty furious with Mr. Shima, the Eagles catcher, because on the Eagles home opener on April 29th,
mm-hmm.
he's an acquaintance of mine who's a friend of Sato's was telling me that Sato couldn't stop screaming at Shima the day after, 2 days later, because all he'd done was call slider, 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 slider.
And we know those are tough on the arm.
Well, those people think they're tough on the arm, and I think Sato thinks they're tough on the arm. And this is something that Nomura used to do a lot with Tanaka. It used to drive people nuts. So it could well be that once Shima has a pitch that works, he might be focusing on he might be just obsessing with it, and to the detriment of everything else.
Right.
So that may be if that's a particular pattern that he gets into, if it's something with him and Masaru Tanaka, or if it's a larger issue with the team. But yeah, it's something that I guess we can all watch for when we see the Eagles play.
All right, well, count the sliders. We will count the sliders with the Rakuten Eagles. Now, the next item I wanted to get to was something that Central League managers do a lot of, but now this is Interleague, and they don't announce the pitchers. The Pacific
Correct.
League generally announces pitchers. Well, generally, they regularly announce pitchers, not as probables, but as starting pitchers.
Right.
The Central League does not.
And now we're in a situation where the Pacific League teams are having teams are naming designated hitters in Pacific League parks without knowing who's going to be facing them, a right-hander or a left-hander. And
right.
This got Kenjiro Nomura into some trouble.
Well, yeah, and it's partially, and this is something the Chunichi Dragons skipper, Hiromitsu Ochiai, likes to do, which is to temporarily just put a pitcher's name in the lineup card. And then when he sees who's throwing, if there's a platoon situation, if it's a right-hander, he'll put a left-handed batter in and vice versa.
Sure.
And he likes to do this, and it has become commonplace.
Well, yeah, he activated Yamai.
Uh-huh.
Friday.
On Friday.
He told everybody he was going to activate him on Thursday, and he did activate him on Friday. And so... But the Lions weren't particularly fooled by that, but all the Dragons beat reporters were. They said it's going to be Yamai on Friday and Chen on Saturday, but of course anybody who believes Ochiai Yeah.
I will never forget the time you said, oh, Ochai was speaking? Yeah, so that must have been because he's...
I didn't say that. he loves to just tell lies.
I mean, he just does. He just loves that. He's like an addict. He loves talking about baseball, the pure way of baseball. But he's an addict with telling lies about his pitchers.
Pathological, even. All right, so Nomura the other day decides that he's going to put a pitcher. And this is in, I believe it's at Kyocera Dome, and he's going to put a pitcher, in the DH spot, and then take that pitcher out and put the DH, depending on whether there was a right-hander or a left-hander going up against his team, and he was playing Oryx.
He's got Imamura in there as a pinch hitter.
So game time comes around, and, the cards are exchanged. And, it was actually the Akinobu Okada of the Buffaloes, the manager, who said, you got a pitcher named in your lineup and he's got a bat once, so, don't forget. And
he came up and he came up in a situation where he could sacrifice, and he sacrificed, and then they got his butt out of the game.
But I look at this kind of a thing and I'm thinking, all right, managers make mistakes like this early on, in line of car. How come no coaches or no one on the staff noticed it?
That's a good point.
I mean, you got to say, hey, Skip, you got this pitcher, in here. We're in this Pacific League Park. If he bats, it's to the detriment to our team, and if you don't bat, the pitcher has to come in and bat. The other issue is, I don't think they were really lucky, because Imamura. He had thrown recently, and a lot of times when these pitchers throw, they don't travel with the team. They'll go either home or to the next city. They were lucky he was there.
Well, no, because if he wasn't with the team, they wouldn't have had him on the 25-man roster.
Well, I talked to one of the beat writers today, and he said, he said they were lucky he was there.
But I don't think they would have put him in the lineup if he were. They couldn't.
If he was not on the 25-man, but he had thrown recently. Not like they were going to deactivate him or anything. He just had thrown recently, so.
Right.
Still, why did no one on the staff come up and say, hey, Skip, you got a problem here?
I think this is, I don't know. I can't. Let's say, I think it's just something that happened once, and Hisanobu Watanabe, the morning after that six-run ninth inning his team surrendered, said, it's baseball, these things happen, but... I can't allow that they happen more than once a year.
Yeah. Well,
two, three times won't make it.
Yeah, I don't...
He blamed that. He blamed himself for that.
Right.
He let the starter in too long, and I said, what point did you feel? Did you have that flash of, this is not working? He said, first pitch. First pitch in the ninth inning, I thought, okay, we're in trouble.
All right. Well, hopefully these managers will get it down. But I'm more concerned that the whole coaching staff and the whole bench staff didn't help him out there, because managers do need help. Somebody's got to go through the lineup card. There's one other item I wanted to get to that I didn't tell you about, and I'm going to surprise you with this. But Alex Ramirez, you did mention that he had the most consecutive games at cleanup spot for the Giants. He also became the first foreign player to bat one in the cleanup spot in 1,000 games.
Wow.
Now, batting cleanup for, X number of games. Who leads, in your very educated opinion, who do you think leads all time in NPB?
Batting cleanup?
Batting cleanup for whatever team they were on at the time.
I'd say Nagashima.
You are incorrect, sir.
Wow.
Nomura Katsuya.
Okay. Not a big surprise. He's played more games than
more
anybody.
More games, yeah. And the number is 2,259. So, Alex, good luck, buddy. You go get him.
As you know, Alex is still 27 years old. Wait, hold on. I have to catch up.
He's still 27 after all these years. All right. We did not have a question this week, but I wanted Jim to answer the question that we had from last week. So let's go to fielding questions.
All right. Well, a listener asked about the press boxes and how we're received by Japanese players and managers and peers and other journalists. Are we treated the same as Japanese reporters, or have we faced some barriers? Well, I have an enormous language barrier. Every time I speak Japanese, half the people within earshot turn and run. it's pretty sad. I mean, I can, if people want to communicate with me, they can, and if they don't, they know where to go. They can hide.
Oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. Oh, but you're speaking English.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Exactly.
Yeah, that is, you know, you're in the country and you're speaking the language, so, you know, they have to work to communicate. I mean, you know, it's part of their job to talk to players.
As far as do we have access with the Japanese players? No. No, but partially, it's hard to measure that because we're not beat reporters who are stuck with the team for 10 months a year. Those reporters are in a position where they can have fairly good rapport with players on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really have that. On the other hand, they're also in a position where they can really irritate the heck out of individual players and coaches if they fail to mind their P's and Q's.
Right.
We're in a much more, in a shallower, you know, we're in a kind of a shallower situation. We see teams here and there now and then. But as far as feeling there's a barrier between us, I don't feel it. I find most of the reporters either neutral or friendly.
Same here.
I've had a few reporters who, you know, I've had disagreements with or minor misunderstandings with, but no, most of the ladies and gentlemen are in fact ladies and gentlemen. And those of you who aren't know who you are.
And I'm sure they're listening.
Yeah, well, that's probably not true, but hope they will be soon.
All right. Well, please remember that you can email the. Well, let me do that again. All right. Well, please email the show anytime. yakujohn@gmail.com. That's yakujohn@gmail.com, and we'll try to answer your questions on the show. Thanks a lot, Jim. It's good to hear you, and I haven't seen you, but good to hear your voice again and know that you're back safely.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed the time in New York, and I did miss Japanese baseball. Coming back after 2 weeks was very hard.
Well, that's because you had to see the Mets, but that's and the Dodgers. Good grief.
That's below the belt. Nope. Enjoyed it, and it's just good. It is good to be back and among friendly faces and back in the action.
All right, so we'll see next week how my Swallows are doing in interleague play and how your Marines are doing in interleague play. And we'll talk about the week that was.
Okay.
Talk to you next week, bud.
Cheers.